Yeah. All right, so tonight's Sunday night. I experienced the big book for those listening on the podcast. And we're going to start a study on Sunday nights, step 6 and 7. We started last week with the beginning. I read two stories from the book Drop the Rock. Drop the Rock was published around 1990. It's a members' look at steps 6 and 7. There used to be Drop the Rock meetings. People would study this book because there's not a lot of discussion in the big book. There are only two paragraphs, and these are the steps that change us. These are powerful steps, and this book is really good. So we're going to look at it over the next few weeks. I'm going to copy pages that I think are relevant. You can get the book on Amazon. It's only about $6 or $8. I highly recommend it. And so we're going to pick up today on XIV, because I rushed a little last week through this. And I'm only going to finish the introduction tonight, and then we can open it up. And I'm interested in hearing what people think about some of the things we're going to read. We're passing around the basket. To me, the whole program is really 6 and 7, because it's either I'm going to change my personality or not. I also have, if anybody doesn't have a spiritual checklist, I have some copies, and it's really good to look at this while we're looking at this handout. And it's on the site for those listening, the spiritual checklist. I'm going to start with these stories from Mary and Mike are good illustrations for a better understanding of working the 6 and 7 steps. The first 5 steps has supplied the foundation for recovery. The next two steps begin the active day-to-day solution. Notice they say it's active day-to-day, and I even say minute-to-minute. Moment to moment, because 6 and 7 is looking at each moment when I'm separated from God and I'm into self. And removing what blocks me from my usefulness to other people and to our higher power, and especially what blocks us from ourselves. And I wrote that it's never really completed, this process of 6 and 7. It goes on forever because we have free will. And we always initially look at things through self, and now we have to learn not to do that and to try to look at as how God sees things. And it's something we practice the rest of our lives. And it blocks me from my real self, the real me. The me I create, it created is by being in self and separated from God. And when I'm like that, then I don't see things right, and my character defects are triggered. And I know that the character defects are what destroyed me, because I saw that in steps 4 and 5. It's my personality that I create when I'm in self. And I don't have to live that way anymore. I have a choice now. 6 and 7 is where we begin to take responsibility for our lives. I can't blame other people anymore for my day or the way I react. I have the ability, with God's help, to change. I have a choice now. And so it goes on to say there are 4 basic reasons we won't be entirely ready to work the 6 or 7 step. The first one is people haven't done the first 5 steps. They don't include that. And the reason people don't do the first 5 steps is because they really aren't defeated in step 1. It says the first is a conscious decision that we will never give up a specific character defect. I'm sure that's true. I'm sure there's some character defects but at this point, having lived years with them, I'm ready to give up all of them. It says next, we blame our defects on other people, in situations, institutions. In fact, when we come in here, we blame them for everything, right? And then we say, well, we're judgmental because look at the way they are. Or we're angry because look at their behavior or the situations. And so we can rationalize, which is the third thing he says, we rationalize our defects. I rationalize my behavior. and I looked up rationalize. It says justify with logical, plausible reasoning, even if it's not true or even appropriate. That's a form of insanity, I think. And we do that. And it says unlimited. I really believe that. It says, before recovery, we spent years on this one, throwing up barriers against unpleasant realities. See, we didn't want to see the reality of what we actually did. So we came up with some reason that made sense to us in our mind and made us feel okay with what we did. And that kept us separating further from God. And finally, it's denial. I said, don't even know I am lying. And the thing is, he says, we are totally unaware of our own contribution to our problems. And see, that's the thing. I said, don't even know I'm lying. And then I thought about it. I don't even know. I'm totally unaware of my own contribution, the problems. Now, in the fourth step, we could see that with our resentments when we did the fourth and fifth column. We could see our mistakes, and then we could see our character defects. And so we couldn't blame the other person anymore. And we need to do the same thing for the rest of our lives. So if you haven't done the fourth step in the fourth column, you're totally unaware of your contribution to your problems. I think most people come in here and they're totally unaware of their contribution to their alcoholism. And I think that's pretty normal. And then as we go through the process, we see our problems are of our own making, remember? They arise out of ourselves, and we're self will run riot. And so then we know, we can't say we don't know anymore, and then we can't justify because they're there, and we can't rationalize. We can, but we don't want to. We want to change, and we want to change. So the order of the 12 steps occurs for a reason. There's not much use in doing our amends in steps 8 and 9 if there's no sign of our willingness to change by doing steps 6 and 7. And they won't be effective. People will know, can tell. They can tell if you're not sincere, if you're not really willing to change. How many times in active addiction did we say we were sorry without the slightest intent of changing our behavior so you wouldn't have to say we were sorry again? Anybody do that? Working steps 8 and 9 is hollow unless we've begun to work the sixth step with humility as our guide. Now, humility is a word we use a lot. It means modest or low view of one's importance or meekness. And so meekness is a quality that we want in AA. It's the opposite of our self-centered pride. And it says the promises come after the discussion of steps 8 and 9. Let's look at the words of Sam Shoemaker to gain some clarity on what the 6 and 7 steps are asking of us. Now, Sam was the Episcopal clergyman who ran Calvary Church, and the mission where first Ebby T. and then Bill W. began their recovery. Sam Shoemaker was in the Oxford Group, ran the Oxford Group in New York in the Calvary Church, and that's where Roland Hazard went after he saw Carl Jung in 1932 and was told he's going to die unless he has a spiritual experience and he changes. And Roland Hazard went to the Oxford Group with Reverend Shoemaker, worked the steps, and then he and his friend rescued Ebby Thatcher from Vermont when Ebby was going to be locked up for his alcoholism. They put him in asylums in those days. And Roland's friend was actually the son of the judge in Vermont, and Ebby Thatcher was the son of the mayor of Albany. And Ebby Thatcher knew someone named Bill W. Anybody remember, heard of that name? And Ebby took the steps in the Calvary Church, the Oxford Group, and he had to witness. And that was he had to go to somebody and witness about his spiritual change, his change working their steps with God. And he thought Bill W. would be a really good candidate, and we're here today. So Sam Shoemaker became a spiritual advisor to the first AAs in New York. And it says that Bill W. credits Shoemaker with passing on to him and the early AAs, the spiritual keys that make up the program and the 12 steps. And I was thinking of the keys to the kingdom. And what are the spiritual keys? And so we open up for discussion. I'd like to hear what people think are the spiritual keys. Shoemaker wrote about the necessity of making daily surrender. It's the third step every day, every minute. We don't surrender one time in AA. We surrender all the time. Chuck C. said, very powerfully in his new pair of glasses, that he realized he was sitting in his chair looking out on the Pacific, and he'd been doing that for 15 years in his recovery. And he realized that he had to surrender every day, every minute. He could never not surrender. And the opposite of surrender is to fight. And so if we're fighting and not surrendering, we're back in ourselves. And we have to surrender all the time. And it says, yes, the sixth step is also about surrendering, just like the third. And I wrote, I have to surrender my will. I have to surrender my old way of thinking. Surrender that I'm seeing things wrong. Surrender that my ideas may not be right. That was a big thing for me. What I think is not true. It does not have to be true just because I think it. I think there's a saying, if you think it, it's true. But if for alcoholics, that's not true. What we think isn't true most of the time. Shoemaker made one point very clear. We surrender as much of ourselves to as much of God as we understand. And remember, we talk about God as we understand him. And in other words, our spiritual progress is based in direct proportion to our dropping the rock. So I read this a while, and I said, well, what is he really saying here? God as much as we understand. Direct proportion, what I'm willing to give up, what ideas I'm willing to let go of. Once I'm willing to let go of an idea, I'm open to a new idea. And once I'm holding on to an idea, I'm closed to it. And so I have to be willing to let go of all my old ideas as they come up. So as my ideas come up, I have to be willing to let go. And as I let go of my ideas as they come up, I'll see more of God's plan and how God wants me to be. And I can't understand God at all if I'm in my old ideas because they block me from God. And so, and I wrote, the more we let go, the more truth. And remember, I've said it before, I believe it, the whole program is in two words, let go. And so the more I let go, the more I get. The more I let go, the more I understand. The more I let go, the more I see God's plan. And it's the things I hold on to that are killing me. And then I really like what Chuck C. said, every day we uncover, discover, discard all those things that aren't really true. And so I learn each day, I uncover, discover things each day that are different. And he used to say, he wakes up and he says, he used to call him God, Dad. He said, Dad, what else am I wrong about today? And to me, that's a good attitude. That's an attitude of humility. I like to have that. I don't have it all the time. But I like to see what I'm wrong. And you know, I'm still looking at that TV today, and I don't have to change my glasses every second to see the ESPN. And I sat and looked at that for 10 years, and I didn't have it high enough up. And then I bought the stand. Took me 20 minutes to get the stand. And now I don't even notice. And I said, you know, honey, I can read and look at the TV. She said, well, I told you to get a new stand years ago. And I don't want to hear that. So anyway, it's just amazing how we're so hard for us to let go of all those ideas. And I think that's what kills most alcoholics. We just won't let go of our plan of what we think. He says, we're very fortunate that all of our defects aren't revealed to us all at once. I think that's true. How are my defects revealed to me? That's a good question. Well, when I don't feel well, when I'm irritated, when I'm upset, when I'm disturbed, there's a character defect coming up, and there could be different ones each day. And I'll say, I'm not going to judge today, and then I'll be impatient. So the next day I say, I'm not going to be impatient, then I'll be judging. And so it goes on and on, but I don't have to stay impatient. I don't have to stay judging. With this step, I can let go of it at any moment and change. It says, recovery works by giving us daily insight into what we can do to remove what blocks us. And we get daily insight each day, daily reprieve, I wrote, based on maintenance of our fit spiritual condition. We have a daily reprieve of our alcoholism by letting go of the things that are blocking us. I don't think we ever get to the point where we don't have to do 6 and 7. It just doesn't happen. And so that we're going to talk about that later. They say progress, not perfection. That's what they're talking about. We never get perfect, so we shouldn't beat ourselves up when our character defects come up. We should just recognize them and take the action to change. It says we need a daily awareness that our character defects are the opposite of the principles of our program. And we're going to talk about that later, but if you take the card and you look at it, We don't want to be on the left-hand side anymore. Now, we may be on the left-hand side, but we can stop and get on the right-hand side. And the right-hand side is the person God created. How did I get on the left side? I created this person. I created a separation from God, and I created that person. So if I let go of that, when we let go, the what we are comes out. So all we have to do is let go of this, and this other person will appear. It's not complicated. But unless we see it, recognize it, and let go of it, it's not going to happen. Shoemaker also passed on to the early AAs the idea that God reveals as much truth as you can live up to. That statement puts us directly on page 164 of the Big Book, where it says the answers will come if your own house is in order. So it reveals as much truth as you can live up to. I'd like to hear what people think about that statement. We get more truth each day, right? We grow. It's a constant. We're to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Remember on page 84 in the 10th step. And the more we grow in understanding and effectiveness, the more truth we see. And then the more we can let go of, and the more we can change. But we can't do it if our house is in order, because we can't grow in understanding and effectiveness until we've done steps 1 through 9 and we're in step 10. And so it's a process. And it says the sixth step helps us do that. Some have called, I wrote on the sixth step, I'm willing to see more truth, what I need to let go of. And so that's the truth, is what I need to let go of, what I'm seeing wrong. And the sixth step helps us do that. Some have called the sixth and seventh steps the forgotten steps, because they aren't talked about that much. They're really not talked about at all. I've been to a million discussion meetings, and they're not talked about a lot. Because I think there's only two paragraphs in the Big Book, and that's why I think this Drop the Rock has really helped me. And studying 6 and 7 and trying the practices really helped my recovery a lot. Others have called these steps the most important. Perhaps the whole program is about 6 and 7. Because remember, it says in the Big Book on spiritual experience, it says we're to have a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism, right? And so if I want to have a personality change, the solution is I need a personality change, and 6 and 7 is how we change our personality all the time. And so by working the 6 and 7 steps, we're less likely to stay stuck in old, unproductive, negative behavior patterns. Anybody ever do that? But you see, here's the gift. I don't have to stay stuck anymore. If I stay stuck, it's my own fault. It's a choice. You make a choice at some point. Do you want to stay stuck or do you not? And I think that what you get, the gift from God, is you know when you're stuck now. And you have the option to say, I don't want to be this way. Before I came, I didn't know I was stuck. I thought that's the way I should be. I was trying to do the best I could to manage my life. And it got me here, and it got me a wristband, and I got a pretty beaten down, but now I don't have to live that way anymore. When I celebrate my birthday, I just am such a gift that I don't have to be that person and live that way anymore. It's such a gift that we don't have to be that way. It says in the Big Book, we're reborn. It says we gain more understanding on how all the steps, all the ordered for reason, need to be worked together. I like this. It's in dark print, so I think it's important. It says this prevents us from falling into the trap of understanding only just enough of the program to make us miserable and not enough to make us happy. It's pretty true. For example, some of us might fall into the trap of thinking the support system of the fellowship is an entire program of action. And I wrote here, what are you being taught at the meetings? What are the meetings teaching people who come there? What are they teaching them about the program? And so it may not be people's fault if they think that the fellowship is the entire program, they're new and that's what they've been told. It's not their fault. They're new. And so that's a responsibility, like Joe and Charlie say, for the old-timers to take the newcomers through the steps so they understand the program. That's what we try to do in this meeting. The action of the 6 and 7 steps culminates in dropping the rock. And culmination means to reach a point of highest development. So the sixth and seventh step is a continual process of dropping my rock, those things that are holding me down and blocking me from God, and basically from peace and serenity and from being a useful human being. And it says, and they call the rock all the stubborn, grasping, stupid, holding on to old patterns of behavior, thinking and feelings that are harmful to our progress and recovery. So you can ask yourself, what are you holding on to today? And why? Why are you holding on to it? And why would we want to do that? Well, that's the riddle of our existence, they say in the 12 and 12. Why we hold on to some of these defects and why we don't want to change. He says, for another insight, let's return the shoemaker who believed progress in the spiritual life is based on our looking inward and upward, not outward and downward. So I'd be interested to hear what people think about that. I'm going to leave some time for discussion. I thought looking inward and upward is toward God, and looking outward and downward is away from God. But I'll be interested to hear what people think. Reading Drop the Rock is a way of getting into the principles behind the sixth and seventh step, not only for understanding, but for action. So you have to understand before you can act. That's why we study the book. We have to know the directions, right, before we can take the action. And so the more you understand, the more you can actually do, and the better you can do it. We'll be looking at a number of ideas and examples of how men and women have made positive changes in their lives by working these steps and by showing up at meetings to tell others of their experience. So I wrote, we should call the meetings experience meetings. The meetings should really be about our experience. And ask yourself, are the meetings that you go to, are they experience meetings? We want to tell others of our experience, strength, and hope, right? What we did, how this has changed us. After doing our fifth step, many of us were directed to go home and to read the two paragraphs in the big book on the sixth and seventh steps and then to do the steps. Who wouldn't want to be rid of those defects of character, especially after talking about them in the inventory process? Remember, we want to admit to ourselves, God, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. The exact nature of our wrongs are these character defects. This is what caused us to have resentment, fear, and harm other people. And then they're always triggered by our self-centeredness and fear. And so it's really, we're looking, when we inventory in 4 and 5, we're looking at our self-centered character and what we want to change and let go of. Of course, we want to be rid of these character flaws and habits. So we prayed to let our defects go and humbly ask God for help. We then thought we had done the sixth and seventh step, and that was that. I wrote, character defects cause my pain and agony, not the things outside of me. I always thought it was the things outside of me that made me miserable. But, you know, they say it's an inside job for recovery, and it was an inside job to make me miserable, too. And they say you can rationalize if they're not gone, that, you know, they're not blocking you from God. And that's what the prayer says. I humbly ask God to remove those defects of character that are inhibiting my usefulness to you. I thought about that today. You can look at it another way. You know when they're inhibiting your usefulness because then you're being disturbed. And then you would want to humbly ask God to remove them. So instead of looking at it, well, if they're not removed, then they're not blocking my usefulness. You could look at the prayer saying, when I see these things that are blocking me from being useful to you, I want you to remove them. And then you can't rationalize if you're still, you know, being a jerk and you say, well, God didn't want me to not be intolerant today or whatever. So I like that. I got that thought. I don't know. I like to hear what people think about that too. Then down the road, we started having the same difficulties and issues arising from the same defects that had plagued us before. We may not have practiced them or noticed them quite so much after doing a fifth step, but they returned with a force that scared and surprised us. The ego rebuilt. We think we've been sober a while. We're happy. We're proud of our years. Nothing wrong with that. And we stopped doing the deal. We start thinking that we had something to do with our state instead of God. And it's very subtle. So he says, we went back to our sponsor and said that perhaps we needed to do another fourth and fifth step. I mean, you can do fourth and fifth steps forever. If you don't do six and seven, nothing's going to change. Now, I love listening to workshops and listening to people, and some of them do these long, detailed four steps. I mean, they're just these tremendously complicated assessments of themselves. And then I listen, and they get to six and seven, and they only spend like 5 minutes on it or 10 minutes. See, me knowing all about myself, that won't change me. I have to use that information to change in six and seven. I don't know if that makes sense, but it does to me. We were feeling and acting very similar to ways we used to feel and act. And I wrote, the feeling and acting of ways we used to is called alcoholism. I mean, that's what it is. And you remember alcoholism occurs when you're sober. So over time, you could stop doing the deal and your alcoholism will be more evident and you'll react and feel the same way. And then you'll say, what happened? And it says, we drifted into a numb place where there seems to be little growth and little reason to change. And we start to move back. It's very subtle. But the ego is always waiting to rebuild. Remember, it's a continual process recovery. We want to continually move forward down the path. If we stop at one point in the path moves back and we don't even realize it. It's pulling us back. Can we explain why we aren't entirely ready? Why can't we humbly ask what's in our way? Well, what's in our way is me. I'm in the way. My ego rebuilds. My old ideas. When I start believing what I think I know and what I need to do, then I'm in trouble. I need to follow this. Stay out of that. Does anybody have somebody that talks to them all the time? This person that talks to you in your head and tells you things to do? Well, sometimes they're a committee. Yeah, sometimes I tell the committee to shut up. Well, if you tell one to shut up, then the next one starts talking. But, you know, this guy said it so well. If you can listen to that vulture in the bedpost. He says, when I start getting these thoughts, I ask them, what's your source of information? Now think about that. Because I get this thought, I say, well, what's the source of that information? I realize it's just nonsense. All right, so let's go over to that. If our sponsor's a good one, perhaps he or she responds that maybe it's in the fourth or fifth step that needs repeating, but it's time to take a real look at six and seven. That's been the key for me. See, six and seven is really implied in step 10. You know, when you're watching for your character defects to come up, and when you ask God to remove them, and you make amends, and you change, and you discuss them, and you turn your thoughts, you're really doing six and seven. Rather than blaming the program and the people in it for the flatness in our life, maybe it's time to rejuvenate the growth process through a jump start of the six and seven steps. There's an implication that I wrote. We always blame others. It's always somebody else's fault. You know, but we're usually the cause. And he says, remembering that the program helps those who help themselves. The program works for those who understand it. And I looked at that today, too. This is some really good stuff. There's some good ideas in all what we've read today. Helps those who help themselves. Joe and Charlie make the point, God won't do for us what we can do for ourselves. And you see, I'm the one that can say, I'm going to let go of this. And if I do, then God will remove it. And God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves, but we have to do what we can do for ourselves. And that's why we can't blame others anymore for the problems and the way we see things. And here's a real good one. It took me a while to realize this. See if you can understand. It's very subtle. If I continue to practice the defects, God won't remove them. I mean, if I continue to do this, I'm not going to change. And they'll say, well, I'm doing the steps. Why haven't I changed? But I'm still practicing the defects. And understand, perceive the intended meaning. So I like that. For people who perceive the intended meaning of the steps, of how we're supposed to do this. This is Bill W.'s thoughts. I'm just going to read these next few pages, then we'll stop. He spoke at an anniversary group in St. Paul, and he left the members with a riddle. If the principles of 12-step recovery are not the 12 steps, then what are the principles? He returned to the same meeting about a year later to present a sponsee with a sobriety medallion, and a few people approached him with the following comment. I've been looking all year since your talk in the literature for the principles, and I can't find them. My answer to those group members was the same one I give all my sponsees. The principles of the 12-step recovery are the opposite of our character defects. We talk about that a lot. You know, we have this card here, but these are just some. The principles are how we be. I hear people say, I'm going to do the next right thing, and that's great. But I think AA, and you know, for me, it's I need to be the next right thing. And if I be it, then I do it. Because the program talks about how we should be. I should be interested in others. I should be honest and courageous. And if I be that way, then my actions will follow. So and it says, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to how I should be. And so the principles are how we be. And if I be a certain way, then my life will follow that path. So he talks about defects and shortcomings and turn them into principles. And that's really what recovery says. In recovery, we try to take the opposite of our character defects and shortcomings, and with God's help, turn them into principles for living. It's called like the St. Francis prayer. It's on the back of this handout. What do I bring into each situation? How do I be? How do I be a channel of God's peace? And I think God's will for me and the power to carry out is to be these principles in all my affairs. And he says, turn fear into faith. So I want to be faithful. I want to be loving. I want to be humble. I want to be serenity instead of anxiety and worry. I want action instead of complacency, denial into acceptance, jealousy into trust, fantasy into reality, selfishness into service, resentment into forgiveness, judgmentalism into tolerance, despair into hope, self-hate into self-respect, willingness into fellowship. You know, if you're new here and you're coming to AA and you have a problem with alcohol, this is what we're really trying to do. We're trying to live a principled life, and then we won't have to drink. If I'm loving, faithful, humble, service to others, I'm going to feel good. If I'm trusting, if I'm living the personality of God's will, I'm going to feel good. I won't need to drink. I won't need to change reality. Because remember, alcohol was a solution to living a life separated from God. So the solution is to live a life connected with God and be the person he created. And it says, through this work, we learn to understand the principles of our program. Now, I wrote, if I don't understand, I can't practice them. And such work may look like an overwhelming goal to an outsider. But those of us in recovery know that our true goal is progress, not perfection. Now, that should not be an excuse for practicing your character defects. I shouldn't say, well, you know, I did all that today, progress, not perfection. No. It says at night we're to review our day, remember, on page 86, and we're to look at these things, and it says now we shouldn't get into morbid reflection or worry, because that will, remorse, that will inhibit our usefulness, but we're to say, God, forgive me, and ask him to direct corrective measures to this. And so all the time we're constantly trying to see how we can change with God's help. As the big book tells us, we're not destined for sainthood, and we should not be discouraged when we cannot maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I think they put that in there because alcoholics like to beat themselves up. And you know, I beat myself up when I get irritated by somebody. And my wife said, well, you know, there's some irritating people, and you get irritated, and then you get mad at yourself for getting irritated. I said, I know. And she says, but you're good. You don't stay irritated very long. And, you know, we shouldn't get irritated in the first place because we're all human beings. And really, nobody's an irritating person. It's just the way they are. So if I see them as irritating, then I get irritated. Then I beat myself up for seeing them as irritating. And I know. You understand. You've heard enough. I know. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles are guides to progress. But you know, if you can't joke about yourself after a while, you can't take yourself too seriously. because we're all going to fall short of the goal. So I wrote, we grow spiritually through 6 and 7. The more I practice the principles, the better I feel and do. And it says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, now here's the warning, if practice is a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. So I said, how do I expel the obsession to drink? How do I become happily and usefully whole? I practice the principles. I mean, it's that simple. What exactly are these principles and where they come from? And here they give a list of, you can get these cards, and these are good too. They're, you can add to the list. This card is not the whole deal, of course. And they talk about honesty for step one. You have to be honest about your situation. Hope, and two, you believe that you can be restored. Faith that God can do it. Courage to change in step four and look at yourself. And then integrity is the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. And that's what we seek when we're talking with another person. Willingness, we talked about, is indispensable. We talked about humility, meek, submitting to authority, humble. Brotherly love, you could think of the golden rule. Justice in step nine, where we're making amends, is concern for justice, peace, and genuine respect of others. Because we're trying to make right the things that we did. We're not asking for forgiveness or saying we're sorry. We're trying to amend and make right the way we harm people. And I wrote perseverance is stick-to-itness, steadfastness in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. And remember, step 10 is continuing. We use the word continue. We're going to continue all the time to take our inventory of our thinking and our actions. And when we're wrong, admit it. And we're going to use that information to get back to God all the time. In this book, we and all those who have assisted us will attempt to take a real look at the 6 and 7 steps. We must learn to take, I like this, my intellectual knowledge and turn it into emotional and spiritual reality. How's that? Because into alcoholism, I wrote, is emotional unreality of a self-centered existence. It's not true. It's a world I create. And recovery is an emotional and spiritual reality in living. And it says, so we can continue to change and grow and be useful. To become the person we can become, we must drop the rock. All the grasping and holding on to the old patterns of behaving, thinking, and feeling that are harmful to ourselves and to others. Now, I think what kills most alcoholics is they don't get to 6 and 7. They can't even drop the rock enough to get past step one. They still have a plan. They still think, like, remember we read about Bill, he's dying, but he still thought he could control the situation. And so that's what we look at all day. What pattern of thinking, behaving, and feeling am I doing today that's harmful to myself and others? And then we say we watch with God in the world of the Spirit for what? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, when they start to crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. The focus must be moving towards completion rather than away from unpleasant and uncomfortable habits and actions. And I like the way they use the term toward completion. Please join in this adventure learning. Put the 6 and 7 steps into action. Through these actions, we'll be able to transform our life and relationships. We become reborn. Joe and Charlie make the point when they talk about 6 and 7 that we can live 2 lifetimes in AA. We have a choice, and we don't have to live the way we did. So I'm going to stop there. Sorry I went a little long, but it's good information. We'll open it up. And then next week, I'm going to copy some more Drop the Rock. If people think it's helpful. Do people want to do some more of that? Drop the rock? Yeah, all right, yeah. Good. Thank you.